For July the 14th, 2023, we talk about Amnesia, The Bunker, Final Fantasy 16, Red Matter 2, and much more. Welcome to Level 464. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Jala Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Thanks for understanding us, taking the week off for July 4th. Feels like forever ago since we recorded, but now we are back. And it has been forever since I have spoken to Ben. Welcome back, Ben.
Hello.
Yeah.
I'm back.
You're back. I can't recall why you were out last time. Was that COVID? Yes, there we go. I couldn't remember if you got if last week was COVID or if it was the week before that was COVID.
No, it was I got it 2 weeks ago, and then I was finally clear on the 4th is the first time I tested clear.
Gotcha. Okay. It's all coming together.
Still stayed inside though.
I will update my bulletin board accordingly. Yeah. How you doing?
I'm doing better. I was only one or two bad days, but it was mostly the stress was just being inside for 10 days and dealing with that. It feels different when you're the only one going through it instead of when everyone was doing it, where it's
everyone was doing it, man.
there was no solidarity going on.
Yeah. You stare out the window, you see people playing soccer and jumping in puddles next to one another, and you're like, man, I want to do that.
Riding in swan boats. Yeah. Well, I'm happy you pulled through okay. Did you have trouble filling the time, or was it?
We'll talk about that and what I've been playing, but okay, I tried to fill it with content to some degree. Not that you need to do that, but I also caught up on two books. I finished Fall of Hyperion, which was okay, and I finished Blood Meridian just yesterday. And that was good.
It's a real head scratcher, isn't it?
It really shows how poor I am at analyzing literature, because I had to watch an hour or two analysis of it. I was like, oh yeah, I guess that those things do connect. That makes sense. There's so many things I missed. Even just while reading it, you have to go back and reread a paragraph because you're like, did they just kill 20 people out of the blue? Yep, they did. Okay, all right. Well, keep going. It's a lot of weirdness. So. Yeah.
Nice. Well, that's I can't remember the last book that I finished reading physically. There are books that I listen to auditorily.
Yeah, I'm currently on number 60 this year so far.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
And nice. I'm not even kidding. That's actually the count. So.
Yeah. No, yeah. I see you post them.
I know. Was that there are days where it's I actually knocked back three books because some of them, if I'm listening to them on audio and the person reads real slow, I put it up to 1.5 speed, sometimes even faster. I can get through it real fast.
Yeah. I read the 1.3 on the Audible app. That's usually what I go for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That sounds weird. It sounds weird if you go down to 1x.
It does. And you're just wow, everybody takes so long to talk.
Besides listening to audiobooks, Jala, what have you been up to?
I took a week off of work and I'm still exhausted because I had so much other crap to do. As always, I didn't even get all the crap I needed to do done. But, I did get to hang out with a friend and I got to go see the Impressionist exhibit at the Museum of Fine Art, which, according to Dave, was, when he reported to my mom, an impression of an exhibit. Because it was just five artists and not even their best. It was a scam anyway. But we also visited a winery I'd never heard of down by the Kima boardwalk called Clear Creek Winery, which has wines and spirits, and they are a boutique winery, and it's a very good place, especially for fruit flavored wines with all natural fruit no sugars or anything like that added in, but super, super good. Like a lot of their wines have won internationally medals, like top medals. Mm. So, yeah.
Any standout from tasting?
The Peach Chardonnay and the Black Cherry Pinot Noir are probably the
really
best.
Good.
But yeah. Also their Sangiovese is also pretty good too. Mm. So,
yeah. No, that Black Cherry, man, the just if you could make a Pinot Noir taste more like cough syrup, give it to me, please.
It doesn't actually taste like cough syrup, though. It's because it's like, it's like the real actual ass fruit that's put mm-hmm. in there with, you know, whatever. So, like, it actually tastes more like a cherry than a cough syrup. The cough syrup problem is what I find when it comes to, like, a cherry vodka or something like that. They usually taste pretty fakey, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. But like the Peach Chardonnay, it really does, like when you're drinking that, you taste all of the peach as if you actually are eating the peach, but it's liquid and alcoholic, which is great.
Nice.
How about you, Cole?
I'm doing okay. So just in the time since we recorded last, my grandma passed away. Mm-hmm. And, you know, dealing with all the stuff that kind of goes along with that, but also, you know, getting back up on the horse after, you know, time, you know, just had to take some time off and all of that. Yeah. I don't know. I just, it's weird. And I don't mean to make this a discussion about, like, I don't know, grief or whatever, but that's kind of the only big thing that has happened is thinking about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My last, my last biological grandparent deceased.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. It's definitely a weird feeling because now it's like you are fully in the parent generation and like your parents are now in the grandparents generation and it's
yes.
everyone yeah. kind of levels up and it feels kind of weird.
It does. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know. Funerals are weird. Grief is weird. It's weird what stuff makes you think of that, but I don't want to be a bummer.
Well, I'll tag team on the bummer, or not necessarily the bummer train. I think this last week I had a dream that my grandparents were in, and they've been dead for like 3 years now. So it's like weird to have like the feeling of like thinking of someone you really care about, even though there's like that distance, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's also cool that, you know, can kind of live on too within your mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pops
yeah.
up here and there. So,
yep. I don't know. So, yeah, that's what's going on. I've been playing games too. You know, just everything's let's okay.
That's right.
My face back on. Yeah.
Yeah. No time. You can't grieve your way out of playing video games, Cole.
No, they're a constant. Yeah. So why don't we do the regular kind of show? What with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss, and we can get started with
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Ben, you have been away the longest, oh, wow. So I will go to you first.
The honor. All right, so I got like 2.5 to talk about, maybe 2 to talk about. The first one I probably won't talk too much about, but it's a little bit of a controversial take. So this is what I tried to spend time on. I tried to look up games while I was sick, and I knew I was going to be housebound. So I was trying to look up good RPGs that I hadn't played. I decided to play Chrono Trigger because I'd never played that game before.
Okay.
Played Chrono Cross like back in the day when I was much younger, but I never played the original one. So I went back and played that because there are a couple different lists that had cited that as being like the best RPG ever made. I made it about 2/3 of the way through the game, and then I kind of called it.
At what point in the story did you pull the ripcord?
It was the part where it's like the twin boss battle, and it's like you target one and it doesn't. Counterattack, you target the other and he does, and mm-hmm. it's the opposite of like what the auto attack is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's the second boss, the second version of that boss is what I couldn't get past, I think.
Okay.
So I think I looked up like chapter walkthroughs to try and see how far I was through the game, and I think it was about 2/3 of the way through.
Yeah.
But
the Golem twins.
Yeah. I think that's where I stopped. Yeah. But I don't know. It's like it's weird because I had never played this game before. And so I feel like I'm just missing out when I played it because like it's not the same experience as playing it when it came out in 95, you know, like 30 years ago.
Yeah, see, like, I'd played it way after the SNES's life cycle was over, and I'd already played stuff like Lunar and whatever PlayStation 1 was around, and I had that as well. So, like, by the time I played Chrono Trigger, it was kind of the same jag, but, like... You know, like, so I totally get, like, I feel like this is probably overblown to say this is the best RPG of all time. There are elements that are real cool, and I was on a podcast sometime talking about that. But, like, at the same time, it's also, like, it's hard to go back to in a lot of ways unless you have that nostalgia factor. I mean, like, for its era, for SNES, it's, you know, a really good game. I wouldn't even call it, like, the best SNES RPG, personally. No. It is a very good game that I have affection for. But, yeah, like, I can see bouncing off of it and just deucing out.
It kind of feels similar to, like, whenever I watch, like, old-time movies from, like, the 1920s or 30s or something like that, where it's, like, well, a lot of people say this was, like, revolutionary for the time, but, like, I just can't... I don't feel, like, what the improvements are since I'm so far beyond that. And yeah. So, like, a lot of it just doesn't land, but,
Did you play any 16-bit RPGs? Like, did you play, like, either of the Final Fantasies that came out in the 90s?
I think literally Chrono Cross was the first type of that game that I played, probably.
Okay, yeah.
So it's still a little bit later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What you're saying makes complete sense. I think that, you know, Square Enix console RPGs at the time, like, a lot of it was, like, presentational. Like, they were cinematic and they were kind of leaning on, you know, the music quite a bit as well. And I think that that is a lot of what people's nostalgia and fondness is, you know, for them, even more so than just, like, oh, I played this when I was young. Like, this kind of represented, like, the apex of a form, you know?
Yeah, I imagine. So I'm guessing, like, things like the strength and, like, the stats that they have, like, that with the armor, like, maybe were they one of the first people to do that sort of thing and, like, have that an effect on the gameplay? No. Or...
kind of the opposite insofar as, like, Chrono Trigger, even at the time, that is a very simple RPG, actually. Yeah. Like, you know, some of the bosses, like that Golem or, like, Magus, you know, like, if you fought Magus, you know, in that big crazy tower or castle, like, you played the best boss fight in that game. You know, where he shifts his weakness or whatever.
Is that the dragon machine thing, or is that
that's the mage guy with the scythe?
Okay.
Yes. Like you would have gotten there if you had gotten to the twin golems or whatever. Okay. Yeah. That's like the best and most, like, interesting mechanically. It is very hard if you have played anything after that. You know, where you've had to, like, keep track of more, or, like, the party, you know, like, you were making choices about gear rather than just doing, like, straight, you know, upgrades as you found them, you know, like, it is pretty simple and can feel kiddie. You know, not as kiddie as, like, a, like, Super Mario RPG, as much as I love that game, but, like, still just, I don't know. You've played Octopath Traveler. Like, that's a complicated game. So
anyway, it's not that I don't dislike it. I don't begrudge anyone for saying they like it or anything like that. It was just kind of a weird experience of playing a 30-year-old game and just feeling like you were too far removed to experience it as it should be experienced.
So. You missed the window.
Yeah. But anyway, moving on, the other half game that I won't really talk that much about that I've been playing that's been eating up time is I started another round of Satisfactory.
Shit.
That is a great time sink and a great, like, relaxing game if you ever want to do that, where it's just like playing Legos, but you have a thing. I'm getting to the part right now where I'm setting up, like, coal generators, so I'm very excited to be energy independent very soon.
No longer just shoving dried leaves into a big box.
Deforesting the entire planet so I can keep my rotor generators going. Yeah.
Be sure you keep a biogenerator around just as a starter, in case you need to kickstart the system with it. Yeah.
I remember what it devolves into when you're at, like, the oil stage, where it's like when it goes down, then you have to, like, literally, like, spend hours trying to figure out how to bring your factory back up. Yeah. Not necessarily looking forward to getting to that point again, but for now, it's at least pretty manageable of just throwing down more generators and throwing down more biomass. But anyway, that's a great game. I won't talk that much because I've talked about that before. The one actual new game that I have that I can talk about is I picked up a PSVR 2 game called Red Matter 2. I think this is on a lot of different consoles. I think they just finally ported it to the PSVR 2 like within the last couple months. It's like a science fiction-y type VR game. Kind of like the selling point of it is it looks pretty nice, and there's a lot of like science fiction-y like vistas that you can see. So like at the start of the game, you're on a moon / meteor base that's above Saturn. So you get like a sweet vista of like Saturn and its rings, like going vertically across the skyline and stuff. And it's like, oh, that looks really cool in VR. The puzzles themselves in the story are like pretty simple, but you know, it's nothing, it's not overly complicated, and it's simple enough to like motivate you to keep going, I guess. Mm-hmm. So it's fine enough. The only small downside to it is it's a continuous movement type game. Ooh, and there's a jetpack in it. So I basically can, I can play in like 20 minute spurts and then I have to like take a break.
It's a long game too, if I'm understanding. I think it's like
5 to 6 hours maybe is the runtime.
Long for VR. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. which I'm fine with that. Like I think there's room for, as long as it doesn't get wild and go like 20, 40 hours or something like that.
No.
I'm fine with that because it offers kind of like a meteor experience, and as opposed to like, I don't know, some of the things are almost like too bite sized. Like Horizon Zero Dawn, I thought was another one that was like perfect length for a VR game where it's like that was maybe 4 to 8 hours or something like that. No. But I mean, it's weird. It's like very like shallow and superficial where it's like, it looks good, so I enjoy the game, you know? And like, they give you like some like pretty cool controls where it's like you have grappling hooks that essentially you can like whip items over to you from like far away. So it's a sweet, almost like force pull mechanic where it's like, wow, that would be great to put that in a Jedi game if you had that.
Yeah.
And then they give you like a scanner where you can scan anything in the environment. And then they give you a fun like light gun that can shoot out flares. And that's actually just a really fun experience. Where if you're just walking through a darkened corridor, like shooting that to like dynamically light the area as you're walking through, it's like weird things where it's like things that you can't, like, there's no reason why that would necessarily be fun or the same level of fun if you're just doing this like on a TV screen or something like that. But it's like, it's just weird, the incongruencies of like what is fun in VR and what isn't fun in VR and how that completely doesn't line up with like a regular game experience.
Yeah, if I was doing this with a mouse and keyboard, it would be the most baby time kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And then on the other side of it, like walking up a staircase that goes back and forth is like terrible in VR, and I'm like, why would you put this in here? Just give me an elevator. Whereas like if you're just doing that a regular game, you wouldn't think twice about it. So
no.
Yeah, but anyway,
So like how action-y is it, like, or is it more like a like mist in space kind of thing, but with
VR, exactly,
VR fun box kind of stuff?
So far it's mist in space. The only thing they've entered maybe about halfway through the game is there are some like turrets, like similar to Portal, where it's like if they see you, they'll shoot you and kill you. So you have to kind of like sneak around them, and it's fine enough, like it's not annoying, so it's fine. But yeah, that's been mostly it. I'm pretty glad that they haven't had any like encounters in the dark or any scary things like that. They've teased like one type of like Dead Space type thing of like, oh, am I going crazy? Like walking through this room and seeing things that aren't there. But it's tame, where it's just like, this kind of looks Silent Hill-y, not like something jumping out at you or anything like
that. Right, so, up in your face. Yeah.
I haven't played anything like that in VR, but I'm pretty sure I would not like that. So
give it a shot.
Yeah. but yeah, I've been pretty happy with the experience so far. So so I've liked that. That's been, I hope that there are more games like that for VR in the future, because it seems cool.
Yeah. Now, I got that mixed up with another one that's more of an action shooter kind of deal. And I've I don't even know which one. It's just, okay. I've seen the logo for that one. I think I maybe just made an assumption about what it was, you know?
Yeah. The veneer of the game is like almost like revisionist history, your Soviet Russian type thing. So there's like red stars everywhere. So I guess. So it kind of has that aesthetic, but it's not annoying or anything. It's cool enough. So
Nice. Still getting used out of PSVR too. Now there's plenty of good stuff that's being ported.
Yeah.
Nice. That all?
That's all I got.
All right. Jala, how about you?
Okay, so I finished all of Fire Emblem Engage now.
All of it?
All of it. All of it. 80 hours total. So the game is pretty story light until the last two chapters or so, when they suddenly unpack huge backstories for the villains and give them all these understandable, if not sympathetic anyway, motivations. And the big end boss guy, Sombron, you learn all about him only after beating him at the very, very end. And I would have been totally okay with it being completely story light the entire way through. But since they decided to put story in there and dump it all at the end, it makes it feel really terribly paced and also really frustrating.
Oh, no. Like they got so close. They only had two more chapters to go, and then they relapsed. Yeah,
because like a lot of the maps and a lot of the mechanics are really, really like they're my favorite mechanics in any of the Fire Emblems that I've played. And so like this is still my favorite Fire Emblem in terms of the mechanics. The classes feel really well balanced, and the emblem inheritance system and the ring bonding, all of that stuff is great. And the maps have a lot more variety than in prior titles and are way more fun to play, in my opinion. But narratively, because of how they just kind of, between the fact that it was already going to be story light for all the rest of the game, and then like narrative, all of the actual plot is like crunched into the very end after everybody's dying, like all the bad guys, you know, like then it's like, oh, with my dying breath I will tell you my tale, you know. Like, oh, okay, come on,
they Metal Gear you. Oh no.
yeah. And so like, you know, again, like it would have never been my favorite for the narrative anyway, but then it just kind of got frustrating. So if I have to pick a favorite one for narrative, Three Houses is definitely better, but I found out that Koei Tecmo is where the writing team for Three Houses came from, which is why that narrative is different from Intelligent Systems usual fare. So I learned that from Nick from Friday Night Gamecast, who was on my upcoming Jala-chan's Place episode about Fire Emblem as an IP. So I found that out and I'm like, oh, well, that makes sense. They just brought in a different team. That's where that came from. I don't know who wrote the story for Engage, but someone please throttled them. No, not really. all of the people in the gaming industry, I feel, are way overworked and underpaid for what they do. Yeah. But anyway, like this, I don't know what happened here where they thought this was a good idea, but it would have been better if they had just kind of, you know, given you little nuggets throughout the entire thing rather than cramming it all down your throat.
No, I mean, it would make fighting them more interesting. Like, okay, yeah. I know what the stakes are, as opposed to, like, now that you can't hurt me, I'm going to learn about you. That's just not how stories work.
Yeah. So anyway, I actually would be interested in also finding out who does the ongoing narrative for Fire Emblem Heroes, because Fire Emblem Heroes has like a lot of weird twists and turns to it that like you don't see in a normal Fire Emblem game, like a mainline game. And fun fact, Fire Emblem Heroes is actually Nintendo's highest grossing mobile game. So I did not know that. So yeah, about the Fel Xenologues, which I mentioned last time, because last time I had only played through chapter 20 of 26 of the main narrative and only one of the Fel Xenologues. I think there's six total. So the Fel Xenologues take place in a mirror dimension or an alternate universe or something, where the Divine Dragon, aka the main character, is dead. They fought Sombron and died. And so the story for that, and I'm not going to spoil it, but like it's very dark. And by the time you get to the end of it, it's even darker. Like it's real grim dark by the end of it. And when you beat it, you end up getting five extra units and two new classes, Enchanter and Mage Cannoneer, both of which look really cool, and a bunch of other items. And the thing is, I finished the Fel Xenologues after I finished the main narrative, so I didn't get to actually play. Like, I could load the game up and go play some grindy maps and stuff to try those things out, but I'm not going to do that. But multiple of the maps in the Fel Xenologues are actually really challenging and interesting, especially the last map. So again, like, more with the mechanics. I like a lot of the mechanics and everything. Story's kind of all over the board, but overall, I really enjoyed my time with this game. So yeah,
nice.
That's all I got to say to wrap that up.
Mm-hmm. Question. I think anytime you put 80 hours into a game, that's usually a good sign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
And yeah, kept you hooked mechanically, even if the story was like, man, you were doing so good. You could have just kept it breezy, but no.
Yeah. And the thing is that, like, the only reason I had set this game down when I had begun playing it and had been chipping away at it is because I had other stuff I had to play for podcasts. So, you know, like, I set it down just because I had a deadline for some other stuff I had to play. So, you know, time budgeting is a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But so, yeah, there's that. I also started a replay of Dishonored. So,
nice.
Yeah, this is still a very good looking and totally fun and solid title, y'all. And on my first playthrough, I had trouble at the start of the game in the jail part where you're trying to sneak out. So I absolutely was just telling Dave nonstop, oh, this is going to be annoying to get through this first little part here and this, that, and the other. But I've actually been, you know, I've played both Dishonored games by this point. I've also played other games like Sniper Elite that include a lot of sneaking. So I'm a lot better at it now than I used to be when I first played it. You know, back in like 2012 that this game came out, but like, I think I played it in like 2014 or something. Anyway, like, I'm a lot better at sneaking and taking advantage of those walk patterns and stuff that the guards have. So I think I just didn't want to wait and wanted to strong arm my way out originally, which is doable perhaps, but a lot more difficult. So
you've got to set up. I mean, that early you couldn't have done this, but like, you can play it all out combat and it is very fun. You just have to consciously spec for it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So it definitely feels like coming home when I'm playing this, because the controls are easy to pick up. Like, I never stop playing, and I'm really looking forward to playing more of it. And I forgot just how big the levels are. Like, I remembered, I would go through and then I would go through another way. But then, like, when I actually started getting into the levels, I'm like, you know, there's a lot to them. There's all these different like heights that are going on that you can get to and, you know, blink yourself around to. There's all the different interior spaces, exterior spaces, quadrants and whatever. There's various, you know, multiple paths you can go through to get to whatever your end point is. And so it's a whole hell of a lot of fun. And then trying to figure out where all the bone shards and runes are, because, you know, like, you get your little bleeper telling you, you know, the Dragon Ball's over there, but you have no idea how to get in the building or whatever. So.
Yeah. Or if it's up or down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
are there any like differences in playthrough you want to do this time? Like, do more evil playthrough or a gooder playthrough or anything like that? Or,
well, see, the thing about Dishonored and the differences in like high and low chaos is that, like, okay, more or less, okay, this world is shit. And you can either be shit, which that is in line with like the theming of the game. However, number one, it's not canon. Number two, results in the game being harder for you. Like, it makes it a lot more difficult for you if you do high chaos. No. And, you know, like, it doesn't have a satisfactory resolution to it at the end. Or you can play low chaos and maybe make the world a little bit better, except not really. Just maybe for your daughter. And
you're
that's
still,
like,
you're still doing monstrous things.
You're still doing monstrous things, and there's still terrible things going on, and everybody's shit, you know, except for, you know, the kiddo that you're trying to save. But, like, you know, so it goes. But at least it's not also making your life more difficult as you go through. So yeah. It's like, I don't know. Like, yes, I could go through and play a high chaos run. The first time I played it, I was kind of playing, I don't know. Like, I wasn't sure as I was playing whether I was going to go high or low chaos until I went to a level and it struck me that I was going to kill everyone or whatever. And so like it was a mixed bag. I didn't, you know, really play all, you know, trying to kill as few people as possible, but I also wasn't playing like I started the original playthrough killing a lot of people. And then I got the high chaos, and then it started making the game harder. And I was like, oh, fuck this.
So I was like,
okay, we're going to just knock everybody out with sleep darts from now on and pile them up. And that was my big fun, was piling up all of the sleeping people into a gigantic, you know, hill somewhere on the level.
Just make them a cuddle puddle. It's fine.
Yeah, it's a cuddle puddle. So anyway, yeah, like I am having a lot of fun with that. It is still super fun. Looks really good because they weren't trying to go for realism, because everybody's ugly to begin with. Like, it works because now you can go back to this old ass game and it doesn't really look that old. So
it's the art director from Half-Life 2.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Is this the one where if you kill people, more rats build up?
Yes.
And there's like a rat meter to the city?
Yeah. Well, and then they become more and more aggressive towards you, and you know, whatever.
You get like full on like rat demons and stuff. It's pretty. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a YouTube for that. I don't need to make my life more difficult. Like, playing it as it is, like on primarily low chaos mode, it is relaxing, and I can play it before bed because I'm familiar enough with it that, you know, it's like, it's not stressful. Yeah. If I did a high chaos run, then it would not be like that. And then my time to play would be more limited. So
yes. Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. So any questions about this old ass game I'm replaying?
Not a question, but a statement. It is always fun to hear people talk about playing Dishonored, because it makes me think about how cool Dishonored is.
It is so good. And yeah, like a spoiler alert, I'm going to be doing a podcast episode on all of Dishonored as an IP, not like on a particular game. We're going to be talking about like what is really cool about the world building and the lore and the whatever about this. And of course, the way it plays too, generally speaking. But overview episode.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet. Be fun. So you will also hear me talk about Dishonored 2, therefore, in the future. But yeah, moving right along, though, I do have another one that is sad. It's sad.
Yeah.
It's sad.
Tell us about the sad one, because I'm curious.
Okay, so Corpse Party 2, Dead Patient. So I didn't realize that the last time that I played a Corpse Party game was 2018. I had to look up on the level and see the last time I talked about it.
Yeah, you did a blood drive.
Blood drive. It made me lose my mind so much that I just did not pick up anything else Corpse Party for years.
You had no reason to trust that it was going to be like anything worthwhile.
Yeah. So let me tell you about the disappointment that is Corpse Party 2. So the original game was released in Japan in 2013. They revamped it and released it in North America in 2019. And the revamped version is called the NEUES semicolon, and is built on the Kinix engine NEUES. With additional scenarios and game characteristics. So that's like the engine that it was redone on, but it's functionally very much like Blood Drive, except with less animation. Like your little character, you've got a little chibi character, and it's a 3D environment, just like in Blood Drive, except like your little character's skirt billows, but the legs don't move. So it just kind of like hops.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, it's terrible. Bad. It's an episodic survival horror adventure game developed by Grigri and localized by Xseed, available on Steam and GOG. And it's set 5 years after the events of Corpse Party Blood Drive, which had like an ending where I'm like, okay, they did leave it kind of open-ended where it seemed like they could try to continue a story, but I wasn't sure what the hell they were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So the story in this one, you're a high school girl who wakes up from anesthesia, strapped to a hospital bed with no memory whatsoever of who you are or where you are. You're groggy and you're hooked up to an EKG and some tubes and a drip of some kind. So you are basically in a pre-operative state, like somebody was going to perform some kind of surgery on you, but nobody's there. And so you break out of the room, you break yourself out of the bonds, you break out of the room, which was locked, and find that the hospital that you're in is empty, but there's like this ghostly form of a girl that appears, and then like later on you see like a ghost of an old guy, and I don't know, there's like a lot of, you know, haunted stuff going on, but like no actual ass people. So anyway, the gameplay is mostly like the original Corpse Party, except there's also zombies and other stuff wandering around that you need to hide from in closets or fight.
Oh, I didn't need that. Oh, fight is interesting. But.
Well, they did that in Blood Drive, too. There were some parts where you had to go hide and shit. So if you're caught, you can mash a button to break free, and you can run for a short distance, but your stamina will run out, and you move slower until you catch your breath. And that is exactly like Blood Drive.
Yes.
But the one big change is that you need to equip an item into your hand and use it on environmental objects rather than it automatically being used if it's in your inventory like it was in the original game. So this is probably to create a fumbling with your keys kind of feeling when you are being pursued by something.
Okay.
So, okay. But here's the biggest transgression, even though it's a lot like Blood Drive, and that already is not good news. This game is unfinished. It includes chapter one. It's chapter one and an alternate version of chapter one from another character's perspective. And that's all. They never finished it. They never finished the story. They never finished any of it. And
didn't
it
the original
also
come out like in 2017 or something?
2013.
No, I mean the original version of Corpse Party 2, rather. Oh, wait, yes, no, 2013?
2013.
Oh, shit, you're right.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they never, it's a decade later and they've never finished it.
That is bullshit.
They will never finish it. They also didn't know what the hell to do. You know, like, you know how I said just now, like Corpse Party Blood Drive seemed like I don't know what they would do from here. I mean, they set it up like it's going to have a sequel, but I don't know what they're going to do. And yeah. Then they didn't know what they were going to do either. They started this thing. There's all this stuff going on. And then that's it. There's no more to it. And it also doesn't have any keyboard control support. You have to have a gamepad. So that's a big sin when it's only being released on the PC.
This game almost seems like a troll, where it's like they're only making negative changes to it.
Yeah.
Like I said it before, but like the original Corpse Party, I really like that game. The Corpse Party Book of Shadows, which is kind of like the it's a visual novel style. That is the second game. And that one has some chapters that are really good and some chapters that I didn't like as much. But it was still like worth playing.
Yeah.
Blood Drive, the third game, was bad. Oh, I lost my mind. And then this one, what are they doing? I don't even know. And so there's only one other Corpse Party game available in America, which is like Sachiko's Hysteric Birthday Bash. And that one's apparently like 20 hours long. So I guess that one has an actual ending to it. So maybe at some point I will go play that. But right now my Corpse Party balloon, which had filled up very slowly over the past 5 years since the last time I played a Corpse Party game, is now deflated all over again.
I can't stand that.
I did not finish it. I don't know that I want to finish it because it's not finished. It doesn't matter.
No,
it doesn't
why?
Matter if I play the rest of it.
Yeah. And if it hasn't been touched for 10 years, good Lord.
Uh-huh.
Really excited to see Corpse Party 2 come out because like, I mean, they sold it as like a reboot, you know, so like you could play it out of continuity. So if you didn't want to invest the time in Blood Drive, because fuck that. but wow, this is the first time hearing that it's just not done.
Yeah, it's not done.
Wow.
And I'm like, wow, okay. I have zero interest in completing this now. So yeah, I have so the best thing that I played, though, well, the first two things I played were fine. This one was the sad one. So
yeah.
I appreciate that they're doing like the American naming convention where like the numbers are just jumping all over the place.
Yeah.
Looking at the Steam entries.
Oh right. Gosh. And selling multiple versions of the same game. Yeah.
I might just have to go back and do a replay of the original Corpse Party and just leave it at that. Cause like that would cleanse my palate of what they did. Remind me of what I liked about the original game. mm-hmm. and then I can move on, you know, get my fix yeah. and move on, because this is not worth your time. So yeah,
get chased around that clinic by the animated anatomical doll.
Yeah,
good shit. That was a good game. Mm-hmm. Which makes this more of a shame.
I know. Cole, what have you been playing?
I've got two big ones. The first one, I've played like the first couple hours of Final Fantasy 16.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's neat. Although I've got... Okay. So I will kind of give context that everybody knows. This is Final Fantasy made by the Final Fantasy 14 team, largely. But instead of being a manner of like party-based RPG, be it real time or not real time, as the series has gone over the past few entries, this is a character action game. Devil May Cry or, you know, Bayonetta, things like that, although less technical than those. But yeah, you're playing as this guy named Clive, who is kind of the failed heir of this of the royal family of Rosaria. In this world where the entire story is set up as this Game of Thrones like struggle between different kingdoms, but with the added Final Fantasy-ness of these kingdoms are built around these huge crystalline mountains called the Mother Crystals. And each kingdom in their bloodline, they have something, and it's fucking hilarious that they decided to call them that. They have something called a dominant.
Okay.
Go on.
What a dominant is, you know, I'm not sure if it's always somebody in the bloodline. This is the case for the main character's family, but like an heir of the bloodline receives basically the power and becomes an avatar of like a Final Fantasy summon creature. Right. Who are effectively gods in this world. And so like, you know, your kingdom, it's like it's the Phoenix. So your little brother gets the power of the Phoenix, which makes him the chosen heir, even though he's very sickly. And you are, you know, just become a lowly guard, basically. And there's, you know, parent drama. Your dad likes you, but your mom views you as a disappointment, stuff like that. Good George R. R. Martin kind of stuff.
Somewhat like, foreboding if you're a phoenix and you're sickly. It's like, well, I kind of see where that's going.
Yeah, a little bit. But like, I don't know, the opening where it's, you know, it kind of starts in media res, but the opening is like you're on this team to go and assassinate the dominant, again, the dominant of the Iron Blood Kingdom, which is Shiva. But there's also Titan in play. So like, you know, Titan is fucking gigantic. Basically, it's you've got these demigods that can summon / turn into kaiju at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
You know, so as people are scrapping it out on the ground level, you end up having these gigantic gods struggling as well, causing all kinds of collateral damage. And that is the way that that power is shifting. And so like you start media res. Oh, good.
It sounds like a God of War, like Game of Thrones mashup or something.
Yeah, yeah. So it starts out, you're like on this mission to go and assassinate the dominant who can summon Shiva. And then you kind of flash back into Clive's, like, you know, becoming a guard and you know, going on his first mission. That first mission's pretty cool. Like, you're going out to clear goblins from a swamp. And it goes way out of hand. Like you're sent on, it's a usual Final Fantasy thing. You're sent on a, you know, super simple mission as your first kind of thing. And then it, you know, just spirals, right? Mm. The reason I say like I've got some like, I don't know, a little bit of reservation about it is not because I am against them turning Final Fantasy into a character action game. They were obviously headed in that direction anyway. Anybody who's like suddenly outraged, never played 13 or 15 or the 7 remake, like all of them are hack and slash doing mm-hmm. special moves, you know, kind of thing. So like I'm not like again it on principle. It's just that the offerings that I see on display in terms of like regular combat makes it feel very tappa tappa-y to me.
Yeah,
Yeah, which, you know, just like kind of button mashing combat with some magical spells thrown in and like special abilities that you can do to like close distance and stuff. That said, I'm still early, and like the two bosses that I've, you know, played are good challenges, right? Like they introduce very early on the idea of like parrying and perfect dodges as well, which is good. But like, if they are going to go the direction of giving you a bunch of stuff to tap through, that feels monotonous to me. And I'm a little bit worried that this early on, I'm kind of seeing some seams, and it needs to like, based on what I know later, where you're being sent out on MMO quest, I can see this kind of working its way to being just a little bit like, I just want to see the story kind of deal. And the story seems fine, and the performances are good, and it is a beautiful game. But like, if it's just combat hallways of tappa tappa tappa, what are we doing here?
Accidental rhythm game. Yeah.
So feeling a little lukewarm, because they at least so far, you know, they're not giving me an awful lot to do, an awful lot of interest.
So basically it comes down to how much they emphasize combat as being the main thing in the game versus the narrative they're telling. Yeah.
You know, or if just like, I don't know, give me bosses with cool gimmicks, but in this interaction model, how many cool gimmicks can they do?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, just a little trepidatious, but I'm going to continue playing it until the story loses its charm. And might not. Maybe I'll see it through. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that lines up with what I've heard about the game, is that the narrative is really good and the gameplay is kind of take or leave. But
yeah. It's weird how Platinum Games has become this. They just get dropped in like a special forces team whenever any studio is like, hey, we've got all this stuff, like we have a game and we have a story that we want to tell, but like there's we just need something for players to do, like we need something to make it into a video game,
and then stretch that time.
Yeah. And so like, all right, well, here, you know, we made Bayonetta or whatever, and Platinum came in and consulted on the combat on this, and they did the same thing with Nier Automata. Yeah, it's just funny how that is the case for that studio now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Any questions about Final Fantasy 16?
No. Well, I'm just meditating on it now, but it's interesting how like Arkham Asylum is a Tapa Tapa game, but it's interesting, you know, and it's like you're doing interesting things with the combat. Whereas, like, you're just a step away from it, and it's completely dull, you know?
Yeah. Like, Arkham, there's a reason that so many people copied it, you know? Because it is, like, a good system. It's a very good core system that, by making it reaction-based more than anything else, is good. And I get tired of the combat partway through an Arkham game. Sure. They don't, you know, it eventually just becomes like, oh, different enemies are different kinds of locks, and there's only one key to that lock, you know? It's just, I don't know, perfect dodges and parries feel good to do, but that's not enough. Like, you can't build a whole game on that feeling. It's not enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yes, that is it for Final Fantasy 16 for me for now. Something that I'm more unreservedly excited about is Amnesia the Bunker fucking slaps.
Oh.
I popped in when you were playing that.
Oh, it's so good. I love the original Amnesia. However, you cannot say that its effect on horror games has not been at least a little bit ruinous. You know? It kind of following in its wake a lot, you know, you end up with first person horror games that might have some of their charms, but do not mix their systems with exploration enough to make doing stuff as consistently tense as Amnesia is. And over time, like the mechanics drained out of those, and Frictional came and did interesting stuff. Soma and Amnesia Rebirth, I'm positive on both of those, but like in general, the first person horror game genre, subgenre or whatever, needed a little bit of a shakeup. And this is just a wild return to form in terms of the tension is back, baby. Like not just in the aesthetics or what have you. Like, there's like, oh, I might round a corner and see something spooky, or maybe something will chase me here, you know, like I'm gonna step into a hallway and it's gonna start this scene where it comes after me. No, that monster is out. That monster is out. You have some abilities to mitigate it, but you have stuff to do and it's coming for you. So the idea is, this takes place between Amnesia: The Dark Descent, which was like in the 1860s in Prussia, and Amnesia Rebirth, which was in 1930s Algeria. This is, I believe, 1916, kind of at the height of World War One, where you are a French soldier who gets injured in the trenches, and you wake up in the titular bunker, where the French had built this underground kind of emplacement, you know, basically this garrison, but ended up getting trapped in when the Germans advanced. And in planning a counterattack, they found, the engineers found old Roman tunnels and blew their way into those and found out, oh, this is pre-Roman. Uh-oh. There's real weird stuff down here. Oh no, we opened up an Amnesia game into this bunker. And so you wake up again with amnesia. You've done something horrible. You find journal entries to that effect. You don't have no idea what it is. You're going to find out, but you wake up near the top of the bunker. The officers have fled and blown the entrance behind them, leaving all of the enlisted men trapped down there with no way to get out, and you've got to figure out a way to blow open the front gate. And you are left in what is effectively not open world, because you're in a fucking bunker, but in a very open and non-linear space that is basically Amnesia if it was an immersive sim. If it was like a more mechanics light, like Deus Ex or Prey, like Dishonored, but with far fewer ways to far fewer ways to defend yourself. Like in a first for the series, you do get a revolver, but you reloading it, ammo is very scarce. Everybody's been trying to put it into the monsters and the rats, and it's not been to good effect. But like you reload each shell one at a time, or each cartridge one at a time as it goes, and it's kind of laborious. So you can use that, but it is a limited resource. You have like barrels of explosive or barrels of like toxic gas that you can deploy just kind of around. Like I ended up in this situation where like there were a bunch of rats eating a corpse that had not been burned. Oh, you have to burn corpses or else rats will congregate and become a hazard. So I rolled an explosive barrel down toward them in order to blow them up. Okay. And so I'm very awkwardly doing this, and this made a bunch of noise. So the monster started coming at me. So behind me, I have the monster bearing down. In front of me, I have like a corner.
Seem to be burned rats.
Yeah. I have a corner with some rats that need to go boom real good. And I'm panicking. I can't run because the monster has me pinned up against the rats. So I panic and I just figure, all right, let's just see what I can do. I'm going to run, turn, and blow up the barrel and see what happens. Obviously, I die. and eventually I figure out how to blow up those rats real good without and burn the corpse. So I can get behind there and get at the story kind of stuff. But like all of that is systemic, in a way that in a lesser game, it would be like, okay, you'd walk up and then you get a little tooltip that says, the rats are pretty thick here. I need to find something to deal with them.
Yeah.
And then you would find the two items to put together to scare them off. Right. It would just be, again, a key with one lock. Whereas like there's any number of ways you could have dealt with this. You know, there are gas grenades you can find. And there, there's probably another way into that particular wing of the bunker that I just didn't account for. Right.
Can you throw rats at the monster?
I don't know. They wouldn't let me pick them up.
Okay.
Yeah. So
we'll put a maybe on that one then.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I need to get special rat handling gloves. So yeah, that's what I mean when I say it's an immersive sim, is that like it gives you a space. The space has been lived in, and you have goals, and there are multiple ways to accomplish those goals, which is really fun to do while you are also trying to stealth around and avoid the wrath of this creature that is literally in the vents.
An open-ended closed corridor game.
Yes. Yeah. And it's it is the thing that makes this okay when you could say, oh, Alien Isolation is something that is, you know, kind of has a similar kind of point of, you know, similar kind of thing going on, where it's laying the tension on you really, you know, really thick as you're trying to do stuff. There's more that you can do about this monster. You can trick it. Yeah, you can scare it away. It does not want to. It does not want to be in light areas, which creates, okay, so yes, I can light up. I can light places up, but that also means the bunker has a generator, and that generator takes gas. All right. And when it's on, it is burning down, and you have a little stopwatch you can see as it's, you know, as it's going, you know, burning through the tank, and you don't want to be trapped when it's dark. Don't get caught. So like planning these like concentric circle runs like into places. Okay, I'm going to light this up. I'm going to get as much gas as I can, get back to the center, feed the generator, go back out further and see, or maybe I need to use that gas to make Molotov cocktails to keep the monster away. Like, it, I, again, just a thing that has not been a factor in first person horror games, where you are making a meaningful mechanical choice with the resources that are given to you. Right. Yeah. It's real good. Oh, I didn't even say the best part. You have a flashlight. Most, you know, all Amnesia games have had some form of light or another. Usually it's like an oil lantern, and you're finding gas for it. The good news is you have a flashlight and you can charge it up however you want. However, it is a World War One era crank flashlight that like you have to pull a little wind up toy string on it like repeatedly, and it makes a shitload of noise.
I was gonna say, like, you haven't mentioned that flashlight. I'm gonna have to mention. I didn't hang out in your stream mostly because I'm like, I don't know if I'm gonna be playing this or not, and I don't want to see too much of it.
But yeah, like, it's one of the first things you get, and it's like a huge relief because, oh my god, it's Amnesia and I have a flashlight. This is great. I'm gonna get batteries, they're gonna last a while. No, it is really loud, and that means it'll draw the monster on you.
But if you shine the flashlight at the monster,
oh, it's not wins? Enough. It's not all right, enough.
Yeah. All right.
God, this is a breath of fresh air. It really is. I fucking love this game so far. I've only played 2 hours. There's plenty of time for it to shit the bed. I understand that. But what's on display right now shows that, like, Frictional has been thinking about this. And they know how to, like, they've known what problems have shown up. And they, like, they've shown the work that I, like, they have. I don't know. I'm at a loss for words here. It's just really good. And it's just one of the nicest surprises I've seen in a while, because I expected it to be more like Amnesia Rebirth, which is fine. You know, kind of more of a return to the Dark Descent, but still with less like omnipresent dread. Here, it's mechanics and omnipresent dread, and I'm here for it.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Any questions?
No, I'm happy to end on a high note.
Let's end on that high note.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer. Jala, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
I am lately embracing chaos. So I asked, who is the most annoying video game character and why?
Yeah, good question. I know my answer. I'm going to get started with Casey, who says Eric Sparrow from Tony Hawk's Underground. Feels so good in New Game Plus that you can just smack him in the face when he flashes the skate tape at you instead of following his line again. I've not played Underground.
Me neither.
They posted a screenshot and he does look like a little shit. Yeah, like a shitty little teen. So yeah, maybe he deserves it. Ben, what does Peter say?
Peter says, oof, Navi is a good example based on the fact that I can hear this picture so much, referring to the multiplayer picture. I'd be willing to argue, though, that the most annoying video game character is possibly Majima from Yakuza Kiwami. I've never played the Yakuza games, but I've heard one of my colleagues at work talking about the Majima Everywhere system that was made for Kiwami. Having a gimmick where boss can show up at any time in the game sounds pretty annoying. It's like being in a random battle system with a boss potentially around every corner.
It is a random battle system with a boss around every corner. Yeah, I've not played the Kiwami version of one, so I do not know. Hmm. Yeah, I could see that though. Hey, we added Nemesis to Yakuza.
Yeah,
that's what it sounds like to me.
Jala, what does Phil say?
Phil says, do other players count? The real answer is Mr. Rossetti.
Yeah. It is very funny how after those parents complained, Nintendo had to neuter him, but he was so, I mean, not literally, like they didn't show it on screen, but they had to like make getting one of his rants in Animal Crossing very difficult to do because he was making kids feel really terrible.
Oh, no.
Because he was saying stuff like calling you a cheater and whatever. Like he's still a fan favorite, so they had to keep him in, but they had to go to increasing lengths to obscure him. Oh man. Gwen says, hey.
Oh, you skipped one.
Oh, did I? Yeah. Case says, every NPC that walks faster than you walk but slower than you run. Oh god.
Yes.
I didn't put words to the problem, but that is absolutely a problem. Mm-hmm. That is terrible. Mm. Jala, what does Gwen say?
Gwen says, hey, listen. I'm going to go with Claptrap from Borderlands.
I can accept that.
I don't know. He just became a meme machine. I've never played at Borderlands. I played a little bit of two, but I didn't get far enough for Claptrap to get on my nerves. So I don't think I played very far in that game.
I think they're a very polarizing character where you either find them endearing in the patheticness or annoyingness, or you do not. And it's like nails on a chalkboard.
Yeah.
Ben, what does Alex say?
Alex K says, to me, it isn't even close. I forgot he has fucking goggles. Really, the fact that that game considers him to be cool accounts for about half of his annoyingness. Which character is this?
And so there's a picture, and I asked, who is this? I don't know. Alex said, it's Loki from Bayonetta 2. So annoying, I forgot to name him. And then he continued, you can't even see that his outfit is usually that weird tunic with a hood and no sleeves and ultra baggy B-boy pants, fucking goggles, plus being a white boy with cornrows and a ridiculous fake English accent from nowhere. This is some hate. This is vitriol right here.
Yeah. I can't stand this guy. This guy sucks. Just by vibe. The vibes are rancid. Yeah. Fuck Loki. Let's see. Callum says, odd job, GoldenEye, for the obvious multiplayer reasons. Yeah, and then you would say, hey, no odd job in this round, and then the person would just play as Boris, who was just about as small as odd job was. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. And let's see here. Ben, what does Dave say?
Dave says, Morgana from Persona 5, it's not time to go to sleep, you damn cat. I'm a teenager. I'll stay up as long as I want.
not played Persona 5. Jala, I believe you've dipped into it. Can you confirm?
Yes, confirm. No, do not like Morgana.
Is it a talking cat?
It's a talking cat that has it's anthropomorphic in the shadow world, and then it looks like an actual cat in real life, but says that it's a human.
Mm.
So
if it's just a cat, I do not understand being angry at a cat. Every cat is a baby, but if it's a cat with human qualities, that immediately sours it.
Yeah, it also is the one that tutorializes everything for you as well and acts like your little Navi character / navigation person like Risa does in 4. Mm. So / Teddy.
um Jala, what does David say?
David said, it's either going to be Walter from Fable 3 or the owl from Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time.
Rauru. Yeah, everything comes to a halt when that owl shows up.
Is anyone else hearing do, 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 like the sound later?
Yep. That's a good poll. Very few people call out how much he sucks compared to all the people who point out Navi, which Navi also sucks. Yeah, you have embraced chaos, haven't you?
Yes.
Ruki says the main character, Okabe Rentaro, in Steins Gate. He's a delusional little shit heel that you're stuck following around for at least the first 2 to 3 hours, at which point has stopped having overdosed an assholery. He treats his friends like garbage, treats women worse, knows nothing about anything, and somehow believes he's a mad scientist. And the worst part? Since he's the protagonist, you have to read his constant internal monologue, which confirms he really believes all the BS coming out of his mouth.
Except later on you find out that he actually doesn't, and then like way later in Steins Gate Zero, he actually becomes a sympathetic character. But yeah, I can absolutely see like, hey, like I definitely was like, okay, this guy's annoying and his friend is annoying. Mm-hmm. Everything is terrible for a little while there for sure. In the first game, it's a rough putt at the very beginning of Steins Gate. Yeah. Like the first 4 chapters are a rough putt.
Yeah. And go ahead.
Do they wait until all the characters die until they give you the tragic backstory like in the other games you're talking about? Or?
No, it builds up the entire time. It's just that it's a very slow build up before all the stuff starts happening. Yeah. And then all the characters start to get real serious and real and, you know, stop being these caricatures.
Yeah. So. It's kind of the eternal question of like annoying video game characters, which is like Okabe has had the intended effect on you, Ruki. However, they are working towards something, but also why should you be expected to put up with it if it's genuinely getting under your skin?
Absolutely. Like, it's like I love Steins Gate Zero. It's my favorite visual novel, but at the same time that also requires you to play the original Steins Gate, and the first part of that game is just so hard to get through, you know. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I was taking a drink. Let's see, Ben, what does Jeremy say?
Jeremy says, the owl from Ocarina of Time. Specifically at the beginning of the game, when he always stops you to give you a never-ending speech, and if you skip too fast and don't pay attention, he'll press the wrong answer, and he'll repeat again what he just said.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah. We got people who know what's up.
Actually, you know, I kind of feel sorry for the owl now, because that's like bad that's bad UI design, and we're taking it out on the owl.
They should make what he's saying more interesting to make you not want to skip through it. So it's also, it's on the writer, too. Yeah. Angela finishes out with Austin.
Austin says, Beeble, because of how shocked he is that I'm selling him things for the 100th time. Also Zubat from Mount Moon. Because why on earth are there this many bats in any one place?
I don't know who Beeble is.
I don't know either, but that's a very pleasant to me name, so I am sorry that it is a frustrating character.
Yeah.
That's a good name, Beeble.
I'm doing a search, and all I'm seeing is Zaphod Beeblebrox. So I don't know. I do not know. And there's like a Magic the Gathering. It's a creature type. It's like a construct.
Well, it could be that, maybe. It couldn't be that because Austin said selling to them.
Yeah. No clue. Sorry. My answer, just because I'm feeling this pain quite acutely, although I am out from under, I am out from its demon spell. Daxter from Jack and Daxter 2. Holy fuck. The WAF about that game is coming out. It came out yesterday as people are listening. That game is hateful. Like it is just a completely cheap difficulty fuck. And even the people who like it will admit to that. However,
isn't Dennis really into the series?
Dennis is really into the series, and I'm very happy that he's not here, so I don't have to like be especially vitriolic about something that he loves.
This will be a litmus test if he listens to the episodes he's not on.
I believe Dennis would cop to Jack 2 not being the strongest entry in the series. Mm-hmm. But Daxter, he's the little weasel guy, little orange weasel. Mm-hmm. Who talks in a very fast talking Brooklyn accent, or a Bronx accent, like hey there, Jack, what's going on? Oh boy, yeah, you like look at what's going on. Yeah, he's really bad. It's like the default, we need to make a wacky cartoon character, so let's have him do that. Except he is always talking, always extremely horny. There's a shot from his point of view where he is just like straight up like nose deep in a woman's cleavage in that game. Just a constantly horny, always saying shit. It's really bad. I hate him. I went to pick him up by the tail and then just like snap him like a towel. So it breaks his neck, and then I can just put him in a pauper's grave. I don't know, man. Just take him down to the bird sanctuary, feed him to the fucking buzzards.
Jesus.
Yeah. Sorry. That game really got to me. That's my answer. How about you, Ben?
My anger seems so muted in comparison now, so I don't know. I was going to say Dutch Vanderlyn from Red Dead Redemption 2 as a more recent entry of someone who is very, very annoying for a very, very long time in that game.
What is the genre of annoying?
You can tell he's full of shit a couple hours into the game, and yet you still need to spend 20 or 30 hours of him like lying to your character directly and your character believing him and then continuing to follow him. So that's quite annoying.
Well, still better than the Klansman.
Fair point.
Yeah. Everybody has something working for him. And if you're in Red Dead Redemption 2, chances are there's a Klansman who's going to be worse than you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jala, how about you?
I have a lot of answers for this. a lot of things annoy me. So the first and most recent one, Krauser from Resident Evil 4 Remake Rookie. Mm. Like, I wanted to kill the voice actor, and it has nothing to do with the voice actor, so let's not do that. But like, the character is just like, they script him with just saying rookie so many times, and then the delivery of it just sounds so annoying to me. I can't stand it. Like, if it was in the original voice actor's voice, I don't think it would annoy me as much, but something about the quality of it just is grating. And I know it's supposed to be. That's like part of the what they're going for there, but it's still just, I think it bothers me more than it bothers literally everybody else, because other people are like, no, I think it's great, I like that voice actor, and I'm just like, what? I don't know, like, oh, he gets under my skin. So that's one. Mm-hmm. And then like, I'm surprised that we didn't hear Baby Mario in Yoshi's Island. Like, Baby Mario for sure. But actually, I would also say Mario in literally any game he's in that he talks, that he has any voice. Don't say anything, Mario. I don't want to hear you ever. And Sonic, and also the annoying fan from Oblivion. Like, there's a lot of annoying characters.
Yeah.
Oh, the adoring fan, not the annoying fan. Oh, no, but he's annoying. Is annoying.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, all of those are very annoying. I'm angry now. Well, thank you everybody for writing in with such good examples of annoying get characters in games. Thank you, Jala, for posting this question and for engaging with your chaotic nature. If you would like to participate in these in the future, go to the Duckfeed community group on Facebook and watch out for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. The end boss. Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are going on in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Jala, what's happening in D&D land?
Bearpeen sells, y'all. You've heard about Cocaine Bear, right? This is the weirdest tie-in ever. The Cocaine Bear thing.
This is Cialis Bear.
Yeah, Cialis Bear. Yeah, so Lariat live streamed a teaser of the Baldur's Gate 3 updates, and that includes a scene where there's an elf guy whom everybody is thirsty for named Asterion, and this guy has sex with a druid named Halsin, who is in wild-shaped bear form. So bear peen got everybody's attention, and suddenly, since that live stream, sales on Steam have skyrocketed. It has jumped 70 places to number 4 on the bestsellers list on Steam.
this also coincided with them bumping the release date up.
Yes.
It's coming out toward the beginning of August.
Yes.
As opposed to toward the end. They didn't want to get Starfielded.
Yeah. Well, they're also, to be fair, they also revealed the Dragonborn race, and they look like better looking Argonians, and they look pretty cool. But they also revealed that players can customize their character's genitalia. So more
do it
sex
like
stuff.
A cyberpunk thing,
or? Cyberpunk influenced, I imagine. Yeah,
yay! So, Baldur's Gate 3 has been in early access since October 2020, with Larian adding more content steadily. But again, it comes out on August 3rd
on PC, yes. And then PlayStation 5 later, and the Xbox One seems real questionable at this point.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I don't. That is very funny that they put that out, and you know, people went wild. I saw this story everywhere. That also coincided with Nintendo doing that Super Mario Wonder, and they fucking knew what they were doing. They knew what they were doing when they ended it with the Mario elephant transformation.
Yeah.
And it's fine. Hey, go out there, get it. So I'm looking forward to playing Baldur's Gate 3. I trust Larian. I want anything in the Forgotten Realms, please and thank you. Yeah. I've got some good news. I thought about bringing bad news because the FTC lost the case against Microsoft in the Activision Microsoft merger.
Yeah,
that's a real bummer. Don't like companies getting bigger, especially by acquiring other companies and possibly, you know, making any move toward monopoly. So I'm not going to talk anymore about that. I'm instead going to say that do a little follow up on a story where I talked about the Aegis Union, the Aegis CWA at Sega. So I talked about them putting together and calling for a vote to form the first cross-departmental video game workers union. Previously, like at ZeniMax and a couple of other companies, there had been like QA unions, which is like a real pain point. Like that especially needs organization for worker conditions and such, but nothing that crosses departments and kind of makes for the beginnings of like a full workforce union. This union, the Sega Aegis Union, approved. They actually they voted to say yes, the workers did. I believe here, what's the final score? It was a pretty good margin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Funny how whatever goes to a vote, usually people are pretty on board with unions.
Yeah, that's why companies try and stop it from being a vote. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's going through the NLRB. Let's see here. So it says of the approximate 212 eligible voters, 139 participated, and the majority of them said yes. So that is cool. And Sega is, you know, saying like, all right, we're going to follow the law here, I guess.
Yeah.
But I'm always going to celebrate when this kind of thing happens in the industry. Best of luck to them. And Sega, you better fucking not reprise against these folks.
Yeah, we're shutting down the studio because there's a lot of crime in the area, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know, man. It's just real. Got those progressive AGs in the Sega of America headquarters. So this is good. I don't have anything more to say about this other than union, yay. Ben, how about you?
I got one. I guess Yeah, so Jala linked me to it in the backstage on the level. I'd heard about this as well, I think, on Polygon. It's about Friday the 13th, a beloved game of mine. I think one that we all played on the last Duckstream, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we played it in December.
Yeah. So the developers of this have announced kind of an end of life to the game. They're going to pull it from stores at the end of 2023 this year. And then they said they're going to keep servers alive for up to a year after that. On top of that, they're unlocking all of the basic like progression you can do in the game. They're unlocking for characters. So basically all the items that you would normally have to grind for, you can get immediately. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of in part since they're going to remove everything from the store and you would no longer be able to get unlock those things, I guess, is the rationale. So it's kind of bittersweet news. And then it'll be curious to see what happens after the servers go down for the game, if there's any sort of life for the game outside of that, like if people mm-hmm. can keep it up. I'm not sure how that works, because since it's such a strong IP, it's probably more contentious than trying to keep another game like Doom alive or something like that.
I don't know. I mean, even if it's delisted, like a lot of people, well, they're going to find ways to get a hold of it, and it seems like it would be pretty easy. Like, tougher technological feats have been done than spoofing a server on a game like this. Mm-hmm. You know, like faking out like the authenticator, things like that. So if people want to continue playing this game, they're probably going to continue being able to play it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but this ensures that they're going to get a real good like last like surge as people try and get this before it leaves stores. But also, like, I don't know. Playing this game seems a little bit more attractive now that I don't have to grind for the cool stuff.
Right.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So does that mean there's a chance we'll play multiplayer of this again at some point in time? Fingers crossed.
Why not?
Hell yeah. All right. Cool. Mm-hmm. I'm going to jam in a little side note of a story I read in the last 2 weeks as well. An individual person was able to get Half-Life Alyx playing on a PSVR 2 recently. They had to do a shit ton of like hacks behind the scene and like make their like own like emulator type thing to get it to work. So it's not something that like other people can do quite yet, mm-hmm. but at least it's like a proof of concept that you can make it work.
There's like a path.
Yeah, it's basically making it so that the PSVR can work on a PC is the major technological feat. Yeah. So. Yeah,
And getting it to work with Alyx, like that's a complicated game.
You have to change the controls out, as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, got to get Steam VR to like recognize it. Well, that's cool. Anything that gets you closer to being able to play that game, because it's real good. But
fingers crossed. Yep.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think that's it. It's a short one, but we're back, baby. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
The credit.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 464. If you want to help out the show, you can do all the stuff that you know to do. You can leave a rating or review. You can join the Duckfeed community on Facebook and watch the multiplayer prompts to go up. You can back us on Patreon. It's all good stuff, and it's available on the website there if you're curious. Jala, what's going on at jalachen.place?
So, on the last episode of my show, we talked about Metroid Fusion. It is a beefy 3.5 hour long discussion. Ooh. So, it is a very good time, and I definitely recommend folks check it out. It is cool. You can find it at jalachan.place, as previously mentioned.
Nice. Ben, you got anything?
Nope.
Okay. Hey, you know what? I just it's worth asking. I realize I don't ask you a lot.
I'm not getting a Threads account, I don't think.
Yeah, no.
I'm just letting all social media die for me.
Yeah, probably wise. Speaking of, I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Blue Sky just at Cole Ross, KOLEROSS.
I'm Jalachan in every place I may be found on the internet. Not Blue Sky, because I'm not cool enough to get an invite, but everywhere else.
I can fix that.
Okay, well, there you go. Soon to be on Blue Sky.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. who has titles?
I have two.
Okay.
Rat handling gloves. And the other one is put him in a pauper's grave.
Nice. I have they Metal Gear you. Talking about the Fire Emblem bosses. Uh-huh. And then I have Cialis Bear.
Cialis Bear is too good. I like it.
Ben?
I just had Union Ye, but I like Cialis Bear the most in the title form.
Yeah. Okay. Cialis Bear it is.
Yay!
I think every submission was a coal line this week.
Oh, no.
That's a clear sweep.
I don't like when that happens.
No.
Nobody else was being funny, damn it.
So. That's right. Just
you guys are being funny.
It means you're on.
Cool. Well, it is decided.